The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Stevie Nicol and Shaka Hislop. We also welcome to the program, look who's here, Jan Agafjordtoff and Julien Laurent. Jules, should we start off with the fact that maybe you want to see Gab permanently with a box over his head? Would that not make the podcast a lot better experience for you?
I thought that suited him well. I thought the fit was perfect. It was just almost made for him. I think we all need Italy to lose more often those kind of games, and then maybe he will repeat the experience.
What I love about it, Jules, is that he's pretending it's okay. Like yesterday, he was like, well, second time it's a lot easier to deal with, and then you just poke him a little bit.
Completely. I mean, he it's not even me who offered him, you know, said like, oh, maybe, you know, we could do this. It's him, like, clearly coming up with the idea. And even our producer, Freddie, was like, no, we can't really do it. And he said, yeah, look, there's a box there. He went himself. I said, why do you put that on yourself? It's crazy, yeah.
That's the way it is. Jan, you have told us so many times on multiple occasions that Italy were going to win the Euros. Obviously, they did. So how shocked are you now they're not going to be at the World Cup?
Well, first of all, if I say that Italy will win the World Cup, I mean, I guess they will come to the World Cup, so I don't think you can have a go at me. I mean, I made my bet based on they will come to the World Cup. When I saw this result, I thought it was North Macedonia against North Italy or something. I mean, there were so many things going around there. And North Macedonia, and you just show Stevie and myself, we are old enough to have played against Yugoslavia. And yep. You see how many countries come out of there. And all so many good footballers, the qualities they have, are now knocking out Italy. One of the biggest upsets, I think, in the World Cup kind of history.
Inevitably, a lot of fingers of blame being pointed at different parts of Italy, including Donnarumma, Shaka.
Oddly, which I for the life of me, I don't understand.
People say that it was slow to go down.
Well, hold on. First of all, right. You failed to score against North Macedonia. I think the last thing you need to do is worry about the goalkeeper. Secondly, right, this comes from a long way out. We are talking about one of the best goalkeepers in the world, but I think he's unsighted. Two defenders and a striker in his direct line of vision. He doesn't see it until it beats the second defender. I think that's Chiellini is closest to Donnarumma. And so can't react until the ball gets by Chiellini.
Mistake. So, big mistake.
Oh, behave yourself, Jan. Behave yourself. And the ball, there's nothing you can do there.
The ball, when the ball hits the turf, it skids. So he's got no chance. It couldn't be any closer to the bottom of the corner, right?
I also think when it's hit, the guy catches the floor slightly. You can see from the close-up. And the trajectory of the ball is a little bit odd to me. I know it doesn't get very high, but then it dips. It kind of dips. And to Stevie's point, when it hits the surface, it shoots a little more, which makes it all the more difficult for Donnarumma to read. I'll finish as I started. If you're pointing the finger at Donnarumma here, then something's awfully wrong with the first 89 minutes of this game.
You've got to point the finger at the defenders. Nobody closes a guy down. They're all backing off. Nobody steps Jorginho forward.
Jorginho backs off.
Nobody steps forward. So you've got to look at the defenders first.
Go on, Jan.
No, I'm just saying that, first of all, you ask Shaka about the goalkeeper, you start talking about the attackers. I mean, what is that kind of analysis? That is point one. And point two, if you see Donnarumma just before the shot, he's a bit wrong-footed. He's dancing on the wrong foot. And I think that takes him off that little inch. But to be fair, Shaka, he is 6 foot. Look at him now. Look at his feeting. Like he's going there.
Yeah, but he doesn't know where he's going to go.
He can't see the ball, Jan.
He can't.
He's 6'9". He's 6'9". He had gloves of 6'3". How can he not take that goal, Shaka? Please.
So, he can't see the ball unless his suggestion here is that he's 6'9" and can see over the top of everybody down to a ball on the floor, and his gloves somehow help him and seeing over the top of two defenders and attacker. I don't know how to even begin to address that yet.
I mean, he's trying to say that he didn't get his feet right. How can you get your feet right if you can't see the ball? You're trying to figure out where it might go, right?
Exactly.
And then you can't move until you see it.
If Stevie Nicholls defending a goalkeeper, there's no chance he should be.
No way.
Stevie is the last person to ever defend a goalkeeper.
You should get rid of goalies if you ask me.
Well,
there's only one place that goals could be scored, and that was in that far corner, and he couldn't even take it. Dino Suff would have taken it. He won the World Cup in 1982. Stevie played probably against him.
Well, yeah. Well, maybe if his gloves can help him see, that would. I don't know.
Jones,
even begin
what do you think?
I did think, I have to say, he was a little bit slow to react once he saw the ball. Shaka, what I will say is, this is not the first time this season where he has struggled on those kind of shots with PSG. Such a big boy, he takes a bit of time to go down. Shaka is true. I'm telling you, I've watched every single PSG game this season. He has struggled. Maybe this one is not on him. Maybe you're right and Jan is wrong. I'm just saying to you that this season, he has struggled at times on those kind of low shot in the corner. That's what I'm saying. I mean, maybe that's just not his top quality, and maybe he needs to work on that, but he has struggled a bit in those kind of actions.
Jack,
he's got four years to work on it now.
Tell me a goalkeeper who doesn't struggle with bullet shots in the bottom corner.
Let me tell you
100
right?
miles an hour through a crowd of bodies. Tell me.
Ever since Real Madrid beat PSG, Jules has become the Stuart Robson for PSG. Stuart Robson after Jules to PSG all of a sudden.
That is not true.
Ever since, that's what it is.
I love you, John.
No. So Italy aren't in the running to win the World Cup. If we take at those teams that are, it is Brazil and France who are the favourites. So what better way to spend a very slow day in sports but to combine Brazil and France 11 and come out with
look at that picture.
Look at that picture.
Oh, baby. I wanted to see the David Beckham plat down the middle.
It's not a bad three, is it? Oof. With regards
Backstreet
to
Boys.
How they will line up next season. What was the most difficult decision you had, Jules?
So the first one was Marquinhos at the back, and we went on the current form in the sense that Marquinhos has made a few mistakes recently. Koundé has been fantastic, even if the rest of the Sevilla team hasn't been as good as him, but he's been really excellent. Thiago Silva has been fantastic all season. The two fullbacks I thought were quite easy, even if maybe Dani Alves could have gone out right back, the midfield three as well. Then it was all about Neymar. Neymar on this current form, on this season, is not good enough to be in this team, and can't take Casemiro's place or Conte or even Pogba since coming back from the injury. And as you said, the front three, I mean, it's picked on his own by itself, really. Vini, Karim Benzema and Kylian. That is fantastic, and that's very likely to be the Real Madrid front three from next season. So this was all good. It was, maybe not Pogba and Neymar instead. The rest, Paqueta, Rafinha, or even the other French options, I don't think we're at that kind of level. So that's where it was.
You happy with that, Jan?
Yes, and I think it's interesting what you're saying about that top three. I mean, imagine that top three for Real Madrid, and then maybe a Norwegian two. And it's quite interesting to see these boys play mm-hmm. together.
Oh, Jan. I thought you said he was going to Manchester City.
No. And I said Manchester City or Real Madrid, and I stay with that.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, would you?
How many PSG players in there? Not many, we're just Mbappé, right? just Mbappé.
All right, hey,
just
what's wrong with you?
Just check it. No, I'm just,
behave,
I'm just,
you should behave.
I was just asking. I couldn't remember, Jules, that's all.
Jules, I think I'm right in thinking that there are more France players than Brazilian players, so you've got France ahead of Brazil to win the World Cup?
Yeah, 6v5. And I do think we are the holders, don't forget. I remind you enough. I think we are the favourite, just slightly over them, just about.
Meanwhile, of course, Germany will be in the mix as always with Timo Werner hoping to feature. He scored in their friendly win against Israel and after the game coming out and said there are differences in the style of play between football at Chelsea and here. Maybe the one at the national team suits me better. Here I always have scoring chances. I can score goals. I feel very comfortable here. Maybe just playing Israel every time, that helps.
Exactly, I was just going to say.
Obviously, he hasn't fulfilled his potential after that big transfer fee that brought him from the Bundesliga to Stamford Bridge. Jan, are you surprised that he struggled so much at Chelsea?
Well, I've been fighting with Chelsea fans about Kai Havertz, about Timo Werner and everything. They're okay. They're winning the Champions League. They're the reigning champions of Champions League. And I think that Timo Werner will do well for them. More than his goals. Yes, sometimes he looks like a guy who doesn't get... But he says in that statement... Sorry, I had to interrupt myself. He says in his statement he doesn't get enough chances for Chelsea. I mean... Please, Timo, the problem at Chelsea is not that you're getting enough chances. You're missing too many chances. That is the problem. Yeah. But it's fair to say what he's doing at Germany. He's more like the number nine. They don't play with a clear number nine at Germany. They haven't done more or less since Mario Gomez played up front for them. So maybe that is... thing, but as we know in these international breaks, we all know that they will come up with some statement that someone will analyse against their club. I mean, talking Pogba and so on. So we're used to that.
Can he come good, Stevie? Can he put in the sort of numbers that he did in Germany?
The fact that he's saying he prefers to play with a national team as opposed to playing with Chelsea would suggest that in the back of his head, he doesn't believe he can.
Right.
And if he's not realistic enough to understand what Jan said, that it's not because he doesn't get chances, it's because he's missing them. If he's not realistic enough to understand that, then this guy's walking around day in and day out thinking, what's going wrong here? It's nothing to do with me. It's not me, it's them. It's him. It's the manager. It's this and that. So right now, I would say the odds are against him turning around and doing what he did before he went to Chelsea.
Dan, I will put one on the table. I think that Timo Werner could be the number nine of Dortmund next season.
Oh, Timo Werner. What's that noise in the background? Is that the Laurent household?
No, it's not. My house is quiet. No, it's not my house.
I can hear the dishes going and everything.
It's definitely Jules' house. That's the guilty face I've ever seen one. Meanwhile, on Saturday, I think we saw one of the biggest travesties ever in the history of football. England against Switzerland. Somehow, this Switzerland goal stood, despite the fact surely it should have been ruled out for offside. Our producer's been obsessed with this goal. Even though England won the game by 2-1, a shocking, shocking decision.
I mean, we'll be speaking about this for years.
Well, they will. Yeah, forget the Maradona handball or the 66 did it cross the line.
So you can see from there it's offside.
Right, yeah. Right.
So I think most sensible people, when this goal goes in, VAR looks at it. And it's offside, and if the right decision was made, then the goal wouldn't happen.
A lot has happened, though, between the offside and the goal.
But the game hasn't stopped.
Yeah, no, here's my thing, though. We've become over-reliant on VAR to intervene. Listen, I understand. Linesmen are instructed that if it's close, let it play. If it goes in, then you can review. But from the time the first cross is blocked, and that's the end of that phase of play, I think the linesman is fully entitled to raise his flag at that point. He doesn't need to wait to see what happens. So right here, once this cross is blocked here, if he thinks it's offside, he has every right to put his flag up.
But the argument is, isn't it, that it's a new phase of play after that initial
block, that's for VAR to intervene. Now, my thing is, we've become so reliant on VAR correcting everything that linesmen don't put their flag up, and then there's a second or third phase of play, and nobody knows what's going on, when we've just gone away from officials officiating the game. All right, you think it's close there, then you don't put your flag up.
So, but this moment here, this that's is, a new
right,
place
but,
of play.
But he can raise his flag now. He can raise his flag now. And
well,
you,
maybe
and
he didn't
back.
See it.
No, but if he didn't see it, fine. If he didn't see it, fine. But VAR is instructed not to interfere at that point. If VAR can't interfere, the linesman can or should.
Go on, Jan.
Yeah, but just interesting a point in the same kind of department of that at Middlesbrough Chelsea. Thomas Tuchel, he was so annoyed at the linesman, and how I interpreted, that's a very hard word for a Norwegian, but how I understood Tuchel's theory was that the linesman was more or less, it was waiting for the bus to tell him if it was offside or not. You remember? You understand? Mm-hmm. One second later, he went up. And I first realized that Thomas Tuchel was talking about that. And I followed that. Next offside. And he just looked at the linesman. And then he looked at the bench and he said, you see what I mean? So among the footballers now and the coaches, there is a thing to follow up what Yushak is saying. That is, we kind of so trust VAR and everything now that when they started to give the referees more authority, we take an authority away from them. And if that is the case, that the linesman waiting for someone in a bus saying yes or no or whatever, and hopefully they say that about the decision, by the way, then we are on a false way of using VAR, I think.
Well, that's unfair on the linesman. You can't have it always. You're telling them if it's close not to put your flag up, so then you can't be giving them stick for not putting the flag up. And that's why we've got VAR.
No, but
now it then becomes a decision of how long. And I don't think any reasonable football person would suggest there was a problem if they had disallowed that goal.
Sure.
Because the fact is he was offside, and had the referee or the linesman put his flag up, they wouldn't have scored the goal.
How I interpret it. You tell the linesman, keep your flag down if it's close. If it ends up in the back of the net, he's going to raise his flag or whatever just to say, well, I think it's offside, but VAR are going to intervene anyway, right? It ends up in the back of the net. But we still want officials to officiate the game. So if it's close and then the cross is blocked in this case and it becomes a different phase of play, I think he's fully entitled to raise his flag.
But then if the linesman thinks he's onside, then he's got it wrong.
Right.
So that's why you've got VAR in the first place.
VAR doesn't intervene in that second. If he makes a mistake, we live by it. I have no problem with it.
If this is a World Cup final, you're going to live by it.
To VAR being,
come on,
being the overreaching voice around every decision that our officials aren't officiating
VAR
anymore.
VAR is great and it's not perfect.
Let's be honest, Shaka,
if this is the last minute of a World Cup final, you're happy
Decision by a lineman. I'm happy from Switzerland. I'm delighted.
Yeah, you can't see that.
Jules, I imagine this is the talk of London, isn't it?
Of course, yeah. All TV, radio, newspapers today. It's all they talk about. To be fair, watching the game, I thought that maybe the VAR people took a 5-minute break to go out for a cigarette or something. They've just missed it. They thought this is a meaningless friendly. We don't care. It's going to make the game more interesting if the goal stands. More seriously, you see the referee after the goal was scored clearly waiting to be told you can go on and England can kick off again. So they must have clearly thought about it and then maybe thought, yeah, it's not the same phase, although I agree with Steve, the goal should have been disallowed, really.
England are always lucky with linesmen at Wembley. That's how they won the World Cup. The guy from Azerbaijan.
That's very true. Yeah. Don't tell Dan, though.
How are Norway looking for the World Cup? Yeah. Of course, Norway not going, but Denmark are. And what a great story it was we saw on Saturday. Yeah, and obviously Christian Eriksen coming on at halftime, less than 2 minutes into the second half. And of course, he scores.
Well, this is a story written in Hollywood. And I mean, from Denmark, just to get him into the squad again, his first game for Brentford, get him on again. And then, of course, he goes in and score a goal. And it's so fantastic. You just think of Denmark, and the national coach said, yeah, we want Christian in the team again. We want to do... And you think, well, do we really think that he will be back again? And then he comes in, score a goal, and now he will probably 100% be at the World Cup for them. This is a fantastic story, and I'm so happy for him and his family and everybody involved here. This is the best story of the whole weekend, I think.
Yeah, most definitely. Mm-hmm. Not so good news. The latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast will be available on Monday. Gab will be without his box.
Even worse news.
It gets worse. I only tune in for the box.
You can check that out over on the website.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I want to win titles. I want to play for something, whether it be this year or even the previous ones. We haven't won anything. That's the latest quotes attributed to Paul Pogba. Jan and Jules with us. Jules, obviously, his contract ends at the end of the season. Where's he going to go?
That's a really good question, Dan. I think right now, and rightly so, he's leaving everything open, all the options. He knows that there's a possibility, depending on who the next manager is at Old Trafford, there's a possibility that, of course, he can stay. And the new guy who comes in, whether that's Ten Hag or Pochettino, Luis Enrique, Lopetegui, Dan Thomas, whoever you want, says, hey, Paul, I really want you to stay because I'm going to build a team around you. And finally, you're going to get a team good enough to compete for all the titles, or maybe not. And then he also knows that there will be other clubs in Europe because he will be a free agent who will be there, like PSG, like Juventus. PSG, we know for sure that the interest is on both sides. I think he likes the idea of maybe playing in Paris, going back home, basically, for him, who is a Paris-born and bred kid. And for PSG, who are looking to strengthen in midfield, especially if they can sell before a lot of the midfielders that they already have. But Juventus probably will feel similarly to PSG for Paul Pogba, and there might be others as well. So I think he's right now, and rightly so again, leaving all the options open.
Do you want him at PSG, Jules?
As much as I love the story of you go back to where you grew up and then you play there. It will strengthen the team. I think there's a lot of pros and there's also a lot of cons. It rarely works when a story like this happened in a bit of a fairy tale where, you know, you left Paris when you were really young. You never played for PSG before. You could have gone to the academy. You chose another academy in Le Havre. And now you can come back as a world champion, as a superstar, as one of the most gifted midfielders of your generation in a team that, you know, right now is getting closer but not there yet compared to the big club. And if he could help the team to get that extra step up, yeah, of course, but then the pressure will be so much bigger because he's a Parisian, because he's French, because you would expect the wages to be super high and the signing on fee and the commissions for Mino and all of that. So he will come with some baggage, but yeah, on paper, if you ask me, you know, he's one of my boys, so of course I would want him there.
Meanwhile, Pogba has been linked to Barcelona, which is quite surprising considering everyone seems to have been linked to a move to Catalonia of late. Now, this is despite all of their financial difficulties. We've seen Mundo Deportivo leaving with the fact that maybe Haaland could make that switch from Dortmund to Barcelona. Lewandowski is, oh, I'll just throw Salah into the mix as well. This is all really quite crazy considering their financial situations. This is what Joan Laporta had to say. We're going to continue with the philosophy to not put the institution at risk. We're working to incorporate 4 or 5 reinforcements that we think the team needs to be increasingly competitive. Barca are not going to lose its head. We'll have to adapt to Barca's salary, the new signings will, and to an economic structure that maintains the sustainability and balance of the club. That's a great allure, isn't it? So all these players come in but don't expect to get paid a lot because we wasted all the money quite a few years ago. Jules, overall, Kylian Mbappe, another name that's been linked to. Can we just stop the Kylian Mbappe stuff? He's going to go to Real Madrid, isn't it? That's it. Done, dusted.
I think it would be Real Madrid or staying at PSG. And as we've been explaining and repeating week after week, right now it's still most likely that he will go to the Bernabeu. So I was told there was nothing between Barcelona and the Mbappe clan. And I think that's coming from those people is pretty accurate. So I don't think this one, I'm sorry to disappoint all the Barcelona fans, I don't think this one could happen. And what Laporta says is right. And that's why I don't think the Haaland deal can happen either. I don't think any of those deals can happen. The deals that will happen are the one where there's no transfer fee to start with. For players who don't have the wages that Erling or Kylian, considering the level, will get and will ask for. So Mazraoui, no problem. Great player, and it won't cost you that much. Christensen, the same. Kessié, the same. Gaia, probably the same. Then if you want the superstar that you cannot afford, this is very different. But right now, they're not in the market for Haaland and Mbappe. This is a 300 million, 350 million package. They can't afford that right now, even if the CVC deal kicks on.
Obviously, Jan, you've mentioned before you think it's between Manchester City or Real Madrid. However, you're saying before we came on air that Mundo Deportivo might be closer to the Haaland camp than you are, so maybe you're wrong.
First of all, Pinocchio, I didn't say that. And secondly, it's quite interesting what's going on, and Barcelona and Bayern Munich are the same. First of all, they say, point one, we want Haaland. And then point two, we can't get him. And then they say, well, we look after our finances. We can't have these people. I mean, what Laporta is doing at the moment, he's building up the credibility to get more loan from the bank. That's what he's doing. And then he likes to say, well, we could have got these players, needed to link them, get some story in, let's get going, so that you see that Barcelona is a fantastic football club, as they are, but they just want to say that we are back in business, but look, now we have to look after our deals. We don't have to do it in the right way. And Jules is saying, I mean, 100% right what he's saying, all that kind of thing. But these kind of boys, these alpha animals that is running these clubs, they love to say that they are linked to the best players of the world, just to show that we still have that status. But at the end of the day, they are rejected, and then they come out and say, yes, we reject them because we have to look after our finances. They're not talking to their football fans. They are talking to the banks who are going to give them loans and going to give them a delay on paying back their loans. That's what they're doing.
What about Lewandowski, Jan?
Well, Lewandowski is an interesting case because the thing is with Bayern, imagine you break all records in the world, you score 41 goals in the Bundesliga, and then every day you have a look at the internet when you walk up and any site say, well, we're going to get Haaland to Bayern Munich. And then you go on and on about this. And then after a while, you say, no, we don't going to get Haaland. He's too expensive for us. Okay, you didn't know that before you start talking to them. And then you go back to Lewandowski. Listen, Robert, we've tried to dance with this young girl all night, but now we need to dance with you. Are you ready? Oliver Kahn will be there as well. And so now he's mad at that, which is normally Sahavi, his agent, saying, in Germany, they call them the pariah, what they always do when the agents don't want to dance with you. And then, of course, you're linked to Barcelona. You will be linked to any club in these negotiations now with Bayern Munich. But mind you, so far, Robert Lewandowski has had one sentence of Bayern. That was after a game, which Salihamidžić said before the game, we're going to talk to him. And then Lewandowski said, oh, I haven't heard about that. That is the whole comment that he has done.
Oliver Kahn can't be a very good dancer. To keep up to date with all the latest transfer news, don't forget to go over to our Transfer Talk web scrape, which is available over on our ESPN FC channel. Meanwhile, Poland against Sweden, of course, in that winner-takes-all battle on Tuesday. That game live on ESPN Plus at 2:45 Eastern. Meanwhile, Portugal against North Macedonia. North Macedonia couldn't, could they? We'll find out. ESPN 2, 2:30 Eastern on Tuesday as well. Meanwhile, it's very much all to play for, isn't it, in Africa going into these second legs. Remember, whoever wins over the two legs books a place in the World Cup. All of these games, all of those emotions available on ESPN+. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Be sure to check out the latest edition of Detail, available here on Plus. Landon Donovan breaking down El Clasico. Here's a clip.
Real Madrid are pressing a little better at this moment in the match, early in the second half. But Barcelona say, okay, fine, we'll just pump the ball up the field. You can see Real Madrid are leaving Barcelona 3v3. And De Jong's reaction here to win the ball. Dembele back to De Jong. And then this is, I think, what the whole world was talking about. Again, not what you would ever expect from Aubameyang, but the cleverness, the little flick back to Ferran Torres, and it's a world-class goal. I was so impressed with Barcelona's ability to vary the way they attacked. So if Real Madrid dropped off, they would just pass and pass and pass and pass and pass. And the moment Madrid came after him, they hit a long ball like that. De Jong was winning the second ball. Dembele, first time into him, and now they're off to the races. And then from here, you just need to make a play. And I think we all expected Aubameyang to shoot when he first got it. We couldn't have known that he was aware of where Ferran Torres was, and once you leave it there, there's zero chance he's missing. Another good look. Real Madrid at this point, they're down 2-0. They're pressing basically man-to-man all over the field. And you can do that, but if you don't win the second ball, you're in big trouble against a team as talented as Barcelona.
It's crazy, that was only last weekend. It seemed like a world away. However, of course, what that result means is that there is just a little sliver of hope for Barcelona to catch Real Madrid at the top of the table. Here is the schedule. I think you look at them and I think you would agree that Real Madrid have the easier run-in compared to Xavi's side. Of course, according to the bookies, Real Madrid 20-1 on to win the title. Barcelona at 12-1. 12 points is the difference. Julian Laurent, you know what I'm going to ask you. Any chance?
It's a good question. On paper like that, doesn't look much of a chance, really, let's be honest, for Barcelona. Although they've got a game in hand, let's not forget, against Rayo Vallecano. So potentially, but technically, it could be just 9 points between them and Barcelona with the remaining, with the 11 games to go. However, it would mean that Real Madrid would have to lose as many games in those last 11 than they've lost in the first 29 now, which is very likely three. It's a team that doesn't draw much, Real Madrid. They've only drawn six this season, which is, I think, the second lowest in the whole of La Liga, if you compare with Sevilla, for example, or even to Barcelona. So where they're going to drop the points, I'm not so sure. The fixture lists are pretty similar or slightly easier, as you said, for Real Madrid. The one thing that maybe also is in favour of Real Madrid, depending who you think will go through between Chelsea and Real Madrid, there's more chances for Barcelona to go through against Frankfurt in their quarterfinals of the Europa League and then continue in facing West Ham or Lyon in the semis than I think there is for Real Madrid against Chelsea, for example. So European competition could stop earlier for Real Madrid than it is for Barcelona, who can easily go all the way, which means more games, more travelling, more efforts, which Real Madrid, if they are knocked out by Chelsea, would not have to do. So on all that basic, I still think Real Madrid will do it.
Any chance, Shane?
I don't see it. For all the reasons that Ju just pointed out, Barcelona win their game in hand, as he said, it's nine. You're asking Real Madrid to lose three games. They've got nine remaining, five of those in the bottom half of the table. Where do Real Madrid lose three games? I just don't see it. And that is assuming that Barca are perfect between now and the end of the season.
Not putting a penny on it.
Not a single penny, Stephen.
Nah. No. I think what's...
The biggest thing against Barcelona is the amount of games.
Right.
I think that's the biggest problem. They haven't got enough. No.
Just a reminder then, La Liga continues this weekend on ESPN Plus with the return of domestic action. Real Madrid away against Celta Vigo. Meanwhile, for Barcelona, they're at home against Sevilla in that big game at the Camp Nou. All of those matches available on ESPN Plus.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for watching. Jules will be back, as will Jan, Stevie, of course, here, and Shaka as well, to answer your questions on a massive extra time, which is next. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Stevie Nichols here, as is Shaka Hislop, Jan Agafjordtoft, and Julian Laurent as well. And the first question is for you, Jules, which is a similar theme to how we started yesterday. Jules, fans of smaller teams usually root for bigger teams in the Champions League. Who will be rooting for in the quarterfinals this year?
I can't believe it. Did you write this stupid question?
Yes, it was Dan.
You think I've got better things to write questions to you, Jules?
No, you do.
Nah, it's a fair question. Yeah. And as you've said, I've been used to cheering for other teams when the quarterfinals arrive. I mean, Karim Benzema, as you know, is my boy, so I obviously want Real Madrid to do well. Thomas Tuchel is my guy, so I want Chelsea to do well. And that's the problem, I've got people in every club, so I want them all to do well.
Why is Thomas Tuchel your guy?
He was my guy in Paris. You know that in his first season at Chelsea, after he arrived in Jan, every time I was in the stadium covering the game, he never lost. So every time he was saying, are you coming to the next, you know, to the next game? And I was like, and he kept saying, like, you have to come to the next game, you have to come to the next game. So yeah, me and him, we've got a special relationship. You know? So I want Chelsea to do that too.
Steve, he's going to be sick.
It's okay.
Jules is just trying to get an invite to Thomas Tuchel's party.
I wish I had the
help. Neymar's parties. He's going to Tuchel's parties. That's all it is.
Wow.
You little
party. I'm a party guy, you know?
So is Jules a hanger on?
Yes, his entourage.
A professional hanger on.
Yeah, that's it. Stevie, here we go. Is there such a thing as too much too fast? Can a really big contract make a player not work as hard knowing he's set for the next three generations money-wise?
What?
Yes. Mm. Actually, something I meant to say, you and I had the conversation about the money the other day.
You shouted at me really more than the
conversation. Yeah, I did. And I missed out a very important thing, right? As to why it hurts players.
Right.
You know, you were looking at me going, so you're telling me when a championship team steps on the field, they want to win it more than the big boys, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And what I didn't explain to you was, it's not about the day. It's not about the day of the game and stepping on the field, because when everybody steps on the field, you do want to win.
Right.
It's your preparation before it. So when you're Charlie Big Spuds and you're floating around having all your flying here and flying there, when you're not concentrating on what's happening a week from now, it's your preparation that isn't right. And so you can't perform the way you should. That's what happens. That's why when you have too much money, it affects you on the field, because it's your preparation. Not the fact that you're not trying any harder on the day. It's what you do leading up to the game that screws you up.
But look at someone like Jules' boy, Benzema. who's talked about his preparation and talked about how he's taken things seriously.
The problem is not everybody's got the same... You know, we always talk about Ronaldo and you're talking about Benzema and how they do this and do that. But not everybody's like that.
So, so that contradicts what you're saying slightly, doesn't it? And you're generalising that every single player in the Championship is thinking and preparing much better than those in the Premier League, where we know that isn't true.
I'm talking about guys who are on too much money who take it easy. I'm not trying to see everybody of anything. I am telling you that Neymar's the best example of somebody who isn't performing because he's Charlie Big Spuds. He's right. Got too much money, likes to fly around, doing this, doing that, having big fancy Dan parties, and then when he starts playing, he's not performing the way he should because he's not prepared properly.
Jan?
Yeah, fair point. I mean, I think it's the preparation, it's important here. I mean, I think you just have to look at Rocky 1, Rocky 2, Rocky 3 to understand how it is to be a challenger, how it is to be the big-time Charlie winning the boxing title at that time. Having said that, I think it's also down to personalities. You see Cristiano Ronaldo, he got that kind of thing in him. He's very, very professional. So it's not a matter of always money, it's all about your attitude. I think that Neymar, also without his money, he would love a party, wouldn't he?
Yeah, Jules wouldn't be invited to it.
He just wouldn't be able to go because he'd have no money.
Jules is going to Tuchel's party. He's like, I ain't going to.
I know plenty of folk with no money that wants to party. Can't he go because of skin?
Dan, genuinely, who amongst the panel did you really admire before knowing them through this platform?
Dan didn't really watch football.
It should be Dan.
Dan didn't watch football.
It should be Dan. Who do you admire that you don't like anymore?
If you were a child of the 80s, you grew up watching Liverpool and a constant player in that team. Stevie Nicol.
Oh, we said you'd taste Dan.
Yep. Then you meet him. And it all goes south. Jules, again, Paul Pogba was fantastic against Ivory Coast in that middle field. He's always been great while playing with better players. So why is almost the entire panel of ESPN FC and the biased British media blaming him when he plays with McFred, who aren't great?
What? Seriously?
We all have different opinions on players and on Paul Pogba especially. I do think that part of the problem has been the team around him at United and also the managers that he's had in those 6 years. I also think that himself, and he would be the first one to acknowledge it, that at times he hasn't been at his best, could have done more on many different levels. And we maybe go back to the hunger and the preparation that Stevie was talking and Jan were talking a few minutes ago and on the show the other day. You can't just blame it on the club or the managers or his teammates either, but I do think that is partly why he has not been performing maybe the way he should have done, but that's not the only reason.
But Dan, if I may say, I think that this time Paul Pogba always do these kind of interviews when he's with France, but I think also this time, instead of being very critical of him, I think he had some good points in that interview. He said, for example, that when he plays for France, he got a defined thing, his defined role in the team. I think that this time he had right, because with Manchester United, and Jules said it, there have been different things that he will say that he's been doing big time wrong, but he's been missing a clear defined role when he played for Manchester United. He hasn't played well in so many games, but there are so many games that I'm not sure. I try to find the way he's going to play, what a manager wants him to play, and I'm sorry, I can't see it.
For Stevie, we were discussing last week that Jan paid $130 for a haircut.
Yeah.
What?
What would you have done if you had to get a haircut in Norway for $130?
I'd be walking into lampposts because I wouldn't have got it cut. Put it that way.
How much do you pay for your haircut, Shane?
Less than that. Pay 25-ish, somewhere on there.
$25?
Yeah.
With a tip?
30 with a tip.
There you go. You have someone come to the house, don't you, Stevie?
No.
No?
No.
You go out now?
What do you mean no?
You saw someone come to the house.
I did nothing.
Yes, you did.
What, 30 years ago?
I thought does she go into your house?
No.
Where do you go?
I thought they came and did the dogs at the same time.
It's a 2-minute drive for the hearse up the road
down there. Ah. Or she go to their house?
No. Well, to your salon.
Oh, is it?
It's 2 minutes away.
Wow.
Yeah, same as Shaka, $30. 23 for the cut. And 7 for the tip.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Definitely not 7.
Well, I did that the other day. Right, yeah. I usually give her 5.
But yeah, he's not getting another tip for 4.
Keep the change.
I gave $7 last time. I gave $7 back in March.
Yeah, do you remember that?
keep the change.
Hey, Jules, what are you paying?
So Cutting Edge, who are the best barbers in the whole of London, the whole of the UK really, and come in North London here, paid 15, I think, or 13. Still, the two Nick, they're my brothers, they're the best, so go there. But you know what, in Scandinavia, everything is expensive. I remember going to the Faroe Island with France, a long time ago, and we went to a restaurant, a sushi place, and I miscalculated the conversion in the money, and we thought it was really cheap, and we ordered loads of sushi, and it ended up costing us like something like 250 quid for lunch in the Faroe Island, because it was so expensive, but the fish was great, yeah, and it was fantastic.
We went off a bit topic. Yeah. I thought he was going to get his hair cut at the sushi place.
That's kind of weird.
No, we've got to link up with
Scotty Mania and the price. Imagine all the hairs have been, all the sushi.
Oh,
wait a minute.
And you love sushi, Stevie. Jan.
Somebody paid me the blow dryer. Blowing all the stuff all over the pot. Hey, come on. Try to eat here.
Jan, what was the point in your career when you felt the most fit? Was it through playing matches or pre-season training? And if you could go back and change anything about your fitness, would you?
Yes, I would. I would love to have played in a time when someone told us it was good to have special sessions with special coaches. I remember at the end with Sheffield United at the beginning of Middlesbrough, we got these people working about your sprinting and the small things. I should have done more than that. I was always just standing after trainings with a young goalkeeper and a young guy making crosses for me. But I think the fittest I was when I got Felix Magath as coach in Germany. We were running all the time. I mean, I was so fit. Unbelievable fit. The problem is, I was 33 though, so it was a bit too late.
I would probably say I didn't realise how fit I was until I wasn't fit.
How hard did that hit?
Well, because it's just you're flying. I mean, you're just flying, right?
Right.
You know, you think about it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, one day, I remember it. I was playing Tottenham away.
I was agreeing with you.
I understand fully. Yeah. Like, well, you could just run forever. I know what you mean, Steve.
I was playing Tottenham away and I was playing wide right. And I couldn't run past anybody. And I was like, I'm knackered. I'm looking at the clock, I'm like 10 minutes gone, I'm knackered. I was like, oh. But then I actually did what Jan was talking about.
Right.
Probably about 18 months after I left Liverpool, I ended up getting a fitness coach.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like Jan was talking about doing exercises before and after training. All of a sudden, I was back to as fit as I could possibly be, and I was flying again. I ended up going from Notts County back to the Premier League, just because I'd got a fitness coach, who not only gave me that, but like diet as well. Surprise, surprise. And you know the one thing that stuck out amongst every single thing? I never drank water.
Right.
So the hydration, you can do it all you want, but if you don't hydrate, then it's a waste of time doing the other stuff.
Right.
Which I never drank water.
Have you ever drunk water?
After that, I did.
Oh, after
just for a spell.
Probably a couple of weeks.
Probably another 3 or 4 years, and then after that,
the duration of one haircut.
I downed tools and got back to the normal sort of.
Tool training obviously slightly different, Shaq.
Yeah.
As a goalkeeper, was there a moment in training where you thought, God, I'm old?
Oh yeah, that happened. I remember having a discussion with Brad Friedel and talking about you would dive and you'd feel every bone in your body rattle.
Right, as opposed to normally you just bounce back up.
You've just bounced back up. And that's just kind of a sign of yeah, things, it's going downhill quickly here. But to Jan's point and about training, well, first of all, just to kind of age myself a bit. When I started playing, there was no such thing as goalkeeper coaches. Even Premier League clubs didn't have full-time goalkeeper coaches. Peter Benetti, former Chelsea goalkeeper, he made a living going around to clubs doing one day a week, and including Premier League clubs. So keepers, they just tuck you in goal, save as many shots as you could, and that was it. That was something I wish I had. And then at Pompey, we had a fitness trainer, and he did a lot of plyometrics work with myself, Aaron Desue, one of the centre-backs.
What is that for people who don't know? Me.
Jumping, just kind of working on your springing, just off the ground, and that was probably, I wouldn't say I was at my fittest, but because at this point I'm 34, 35. So I'm really physically on a downhill trajectory. But I really wish between those two, I could have had those from the start of my career. I really, really do.
Bruce at Liverpool and Ray Clemens before him. One day a week, we would do a warm-up that was for the goalies.
Right.
Just knocking balls wide. It was part of our warm-up. You knocked a ball high into the goal, the goalie would come and get it, and then you made a run. That was part of our warm-up. And then we'd do some finishing on a Thursday. The rest of the time, they just played five-a-side.
Yeah.
That was it.
That was all the goalkeeping they got on a Thursday.
Wow.
A little warm-up, coming and catching it, and then we'd do some finishing, and that was it. The rest of the time during the week, nothing. Up until about 80, I'm trying to think, big Joe Corrigan started coming in.
Mm.
About 87, 88 maybe.
Right.
But up until then, I mean, Clem, no, nothing.
On yesterday's show...
The fitness coaches and the specialists, we kind of missed this in our career, but maybe then, We were more independent than the players of today, because now they have a midfield coach, attacker coach, and all that.
Throwing coach.
Throwing coach.
Hey, substitute coach.
Can
you believe that?
They do everything. Yeah. But I think that sometimes we had to make ourselves more doing that on our own, so we kept that rawness of our game that maybe that was an advantage for our generation.
On yesterday's show, Don was asked to pick a side from the best ESPN FC to the worst, and he picked you last, Stevie.
Well, I wouldn't pick me either. Hold on a minute. Why would you pick me? I can't run.
Yeah.
I can barely get above a walk.
Yes.
I can't play with my glasses on, so I can't see. So why would you pick me?
Yeah. I suggest maybe you could go in goal.
You've got the old W, Stephen.
Yeah.
You've shown that's many a time.
There you go. There it is.
That's not a rumour.
As long as I can keep my glasses on and goal, I could do that.
Then it'd be all right. Who are you picking, Jules? Yourself or Stevie?
Is that a real question? Let me ask Stevie right now to play football.
Speaking of players that have passed it, Jules, is the Eden Hazard transfer one of the top 10 worst ever for Real Madrid? Well, it's the worst, that's easy.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, I think, remember we did, I think maybe 18 months ago, me and Ali did the top and flop. I can't remember, I'm sure producer Pete would remember. And I tried to defend Eden because I like him and I didn't want to be too mean. So I tried to say, but listen, look, you know the injury, this is not his fault. If Meunier kicks his ankle and then he had to get the surgery and then they put that plaque in it and it's not working. And now I have to say, and Ali gave me, and rightly so, quite a lot of stick for it. But I had to defend him back then. Now it's too hard, I think, because the stat the other day during the Clásico, remember, there's been 7 or 8 Clásicos since he joined Real Madrid. He hasn't played a single minute. In 8 Clásicos, how is that even possible? I think yeah, he has to be the worst, or if not the worst, one of the worst in the top three transfer ever made by Real Madrid, which on paper was even if he was 30 or getting near 30, it was still a good move even at that price. But unfortunately, hasn't turned out to be that well at all.
There is a sad man that is kind of forgotten, Jules, by Real Madrid, is Luka Jovic. I mean, I loved him when he played for Eintracht Frankfurt, then he came back, and then he came back again to Real Madrid, and he never get games, he never get minutes. He's a great, great finisher. I hopefully he hasn't lost all his confidence and he will come back, because I think he's a great, great goal getter.
So he must be horrible being Hazard, though.
If indeed, he's rich, he doesn't care, Stevie, does he? He's not motivated.
Well, that's not always. That's not fair. That's not always.
Well, that's what you said earlier.
What are you talking about?
You said they're rich, these players, don't care about the game anymore.
Oh, really? He's plumping everybody down. Hey. Yeah, every single footballer doesn't care. No, because, I mean, Jules is talking about that injury he had. Unfortunately for him, it looks like he can't adapt and play somewhere else. You look at Barnsley. Barnsley, at his best, was the best player in England. Not even close. And then he did his Achilles.
Yep.
And he couldn't do what he used to do. But he adapted and he came inside and showed what a great football player. Not just a guy with pace that would go by people for fun. If Eden Hazard is in the same position, and Jules probably knows him better than any of us, I'm assuming
probably doesn't.
This guy's not going to be feeling very good about himself when he can't do what he used to be able to do. And every man and his dog is jumping on him, giving him pelters. Now, it's turned out to be a horrendous transfer for Real Madrid, but I'll tell you what, and maybe Jules will enlighten us, he must feel awful.
Jules doesn't know him. He pretends he knows Thomas Tuchel and he was just in the crowd when they won games.
I do the whole Hazard family. All the brothers I know. So
is that the case, Jules?
They've got loads of brothers.
Is that the case then?
Yeah, no, you're right, Stevie. And I know he's partly to blame. And we had the argument back then when we did those top and flop with Ali, in the sense that he's not helping himself when he turns up for training 8 kilos or 10 kilos overweight, and that he struggled to lose it. And we know he's not the best at training overall anyway. He's never been, even when he was a kid at Lille. So that hasn't helped. But yeah, he's feeling terrible because he wanted to work. This was his dream move. He wanted to play for Madrid since he was a kid, because Zidane played there and because of all of that, and he never really got going, and that's a really sad situation. Even if you blame him and his fitness and his lifestyle or anything you want, or his focus and his all of that, of course that's right, we can't deny that, but there's a lot of things that also were not his fault, like the Meunier tackle or kick or whatever that injured him when he was actually playing, when he was starting for the team. And that of course that makes it sad. I don't know what's going to happen in the summer, if he wants to leave, if he doesn't, if he can stay or not, when he will be fit again, now that he's going to have surgery again on the same ankle. But there's a lot of things also that I think were out of his hands, and that has made him really sad, and the whole story really sad as well.
That brings us to the end of Extra Time.
By the way, just before he finishes, he was sniggering in the middle of that. I'm talking serious about Hazard, and he's got a silly wee smile on his face.
A smile like something else, actually, Stephen.
I could just see that wee snigger.
How insensitive
can you be? Just because a guy's got some dough.
Yeah, that is bad.
Just because a guy's got some dough, you don't care.
That's true.
You don't care.
No, he's not big spuds.
You don't care.
That's it. No
insensitive.
Heart.
Insensitive.
Don't you
stop. You haven't listened to a word.
He's got a heart the size of a pea.
Size of a pea.
Size of a pea.
Pea heart.
What? Why don't you just go off and kick soccer again?
Start spreading the news.
Sensitive.
That is it. That brings us to the end of ESPN FC. No sniggering. Very serious today.
What?
Are you back tomorrow? Snitching away?
No. Yeah. No. Miss, if you're here, miss. I hope not.
Oh, no. He's been... He no. He wasn't paying attention. Yeah. He was laughing at you.
Money. Root of all evil, money.